The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
For Friday, November the 5th, 2021, it's The Brief from WABE. I'm Jim Burris. A state Senate district map that favors Republicans cleared a hurdle at the Capitol today. Democrats argue the map would hurt minority voters, and it was rushed through committee as it was only made public on Tuesday. Republicans, though, say the map complies with the Voting Rights Act, and they've been working on the map for weeks. State lawmakers are currently in a special session to redraw political lines for state House, state Senate, and congressional districts. Atlanta-based Southern Company is shutting down more than half of its coal power fleet in the next decade. That includes units at the nation's two largest coal plants, which are both in Georgia. Christy Swartz is a reporter at E&E News in Atlanta, and she says the decision stems from federal water pollution laws.
Southern had decided that it was going to be too expensive to do all of the upgrades. Many of these coal plants are older. They're running inefficiently. They're not even running economically efficiently. So between the environmental and the economic impacts, they decided it was just going to be less expensive to shut them down.
Southern Company made the announcement at its quarterly earnings call on Thursday. The company has made a commitment to achieve net zero carbon emissions by 2050. Georgia has joined Alabama and Florida to sue the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, over its recently issued rule mandating COVID-19 vaccines at larger companies. The plaintiffs want a federal appeals court to review the rule, which they argue is overly broad. Sam Whitehead reports.
In the suit filed in a federal appeals court in Atlanta, the states are joined by schools, businesses, and trade associations. They argue OSHA doesn't have the authority to issue a rule mandating COVID-19 vaccination or testing at companies with 100 employees or more. They also say the rule conflicts with the First Amendment and violates the right to religious expression. The Biden administration says employers must comply with the vaccine rule by January 4th of next year or face possible fines. The rule is facing other legal challenges, as is the White House's mandate for COVID-19 vaccination for federal contractors. Sam Whitehead, WABE News.
After taking the better part of 3 weeks to seat a jury, the trial of three white men accused of killing Ahmaud Arbery, a black man, got underway in coastal Brunswick today. WABE's Lisa Hagan is in Glynn County to cover the proceedings. Lisa, what did jurors hear on this day one?
Prosecutor Linda Dunikoski began the day of opening arguments, and what we heard from her was an argument that the defendants in this case all acted on that day in February 2020 based on the worst possible assumptions. She walked the jury through, you know, the facts of the case from the state's side, which were that the McMichaels, they didn't know the owner of the house where Arbery had been sort of jogging and looking around in. They made decisions to get the guns at their houses. They didn't call the police right away. She was saying, you know, that they did everything they could to trap Arbery, which is where kidnapping charges come in this case. And she also made sure to say that no one declared during this incident that they were making a citizen's arrest. So this argument that we are likely to hear from the defense and have in fact heard from the defense is that about a citizen's arrest being made is not relevant.
because presumably the law that was in effect then, that is not now, but you would have to announce that. The person would have to know that they were under citizen's arrest for it to be valid.
I think there are some other very specific parameters about that, and I'm sure it's going to become a central part of the case, but it's simply trying to get at the idea of intent, that there was no sort of formal reason the McMichaels and Roddy Bryan should have been out doing what they did that day, she says.
So that's one side.
Yes.
And you heard from the other.
Yes, indeed. Well, we've heard from Bob Rubin, who is the defense lawyer for Travis McMichael. That's the son in this case. He's the one who actually fired the shotgun but killed Arbery. And Rubin sort of explains his way of framing this is that this is a case about duty and responsibility. And he sort of lays out all of the ways that he believes the McMichaels, or Travis in this case, because that's his client, were trying to protect their community from alleged acts of burglary. There was really only one theft that happened, so there's a lot of discussion about that. One thing that I will note, it's very clear that the defense is doing everything it can so far to tie the McMichaels to sort of notions of law enforcement. Of course, we know that the older McMichael, Gregory, had some experience in law enforcement as an investigator. And they're also playing up the idea that Travis, the son, had Coast Guard training and was actually a trainer within the Coast Guard. So I think we're going to see a lot of arguments around these guys were trained law enforcement, and even though they didn't have arrest powers that day, they did everything within, you know, the normal parameters of how police officers might act in that situation.
And the jury, which, you know, has so far been the focus of the entire trial, did you get a sense of how they took both sides? Could you read like a facial expression, or did they show any type of engagement?
You know, it's difficult because some of the jurors have masks on. What I do know is that the parents of Ahmaud Arbery are in court today, and, you know, they've had to take moments. Marcus Arbery Sr. walked out of the building when they were showing video of the incident. And my understanding is that Wanda Cooper Jones, Arbery's mom, has been crying through the video and sounding fairly upset at the defense's argument thus far.
There's speculation that the trial may go much longer than initially thought. Do you have a sense on that?
I do not. It's hard to say. It's really going to depend on how quickly we get through the rest of these arguments. But we do know that jury selection has taken longer than expected. So we'll see about the rest of the trial.
WABE's Lisa Hagan is covering the Arbery trial down in Brunswick, Georgia. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jim.
Daylight saving time ends early on Sunday morning. Georgia lawmakers have moved to end the practice of switching back and forth, but as Molly Samuel reports, for now, we do still have to set our clocks back 1 hour.
Earlier this year, Governor Brian Kemp signed a bill to allow Georgia to observe daylight saving time year-round, meaning we'd stick with the schedule we're on right now, not the one that starts this weekend. But for the state to actually start doing that, it would take an act by the U.S. Congress. According to the National Conference of State Legislatures, Georgia is one of 19 states that have passed legislation to stay in daylight saving once national lawmakers will allow it. Molly Samuel, WABE News.
Hundreds of thousands of people lined the streets of downtown Atlanta for a parade today honoring the World Series champion Atlanta Braves. Carl Wright is one of them. He's been a Braves fan since his dad took him to a game in the team's first season in Atlanta. That was all the way back in 1966.
I'm just glad to see that, you know, we brought prominence back to the city through a World Series, you know, and hopefully that we can go back and have more.
The parade eventually continued to Truist Park, where the team hosted a victory rally on the field. This is the Braves' first championship since 1995, and we wish them all the best. Congratulations on an amazing season. And that's it for The Brief. You can find more local news at WABE.org. Lily Oppenheimer produced today's program. Special thanks to Alex Helmick as...
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WABE Politics podcast. New name, same on-the-ground reporting from us, WABE Politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Valley. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we talk to politicians and voters to break down each week's biggest headlines. New episodes drop on Fridays. Listen and subscribe at WABE.org or your favorite podcast platform.
WABE.